This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, wibbly wobbly timey wimey, time travel and speculative fiction.
Jules gave me special concessions to use that that first half of the title.
Yeah, so I've got to say it's my least favourite quote from Doctor Who, but okay.
See, I was actually quite proud of the second half, but Jules said no, because the second half was going to be time travel through the ages, which I thought was great, but Jules put her foot down.
You can't have both of them.
So we started with wibbly wobbly timey wimey. So weirdly enough, this episode was one that I suggested just when Jules was about to suggest the same thing.
Yeah, it was weird actually. I'd been kind of thinking over for about 2 weeks, and then you said it this morning. I was like, oh yeah, I was gonna suggest that one.
And we kind of suddenly both went, I mean, way. And then we looked back over the episodes and went, no, we haven't.
Yeah, I could have sworn we had, but no, I don't think we have. I think it's one we talked about doing and then we never got around to, and we've sort of talked around the edges of it.
Yeah.
Today we're going full on, full frontal physics on this.
Yeah, so brace yourselves because Jules is going to get technical.
I'm not.
She's already warned me.
there won't be equations because my level of mathematical ability sort of falls quite short of actually doing time travel. You'll be pleased to know. But the theory.
Well, you say that, but I think we've already established that you write historical fiction by going back in time and bothering peasants. So.
For bothering peasants, yeah, the people you'd actually know about. Bothering monks, maybe, as they're writing shit down. Can you translate that into English? I know you're supposed to write it in Latin, but, you know, I can manage the Middle English.
Ah! Witch! None of that! Sit down and translate this for me.
To be honest, if I went back to the 14th century and started talking to them, they'd be looking at me as if to say, what the fuck is she saying? What language is that? That's not French.
Yeah.
Is it Bulgarian, perhaps? Actually, Bulgaria didn't technically exist at the time.
Yeah.
The time traveller from Bulgaria. So, let's continue with the episode.
Yes. So, let's start by kind of looking at a brief history of travel in literature. Not a brief history of actual time travel, though that would be cool as well.
Yeah, but we're not allowed to talk about that. We were warned by the government, and really this is our last chance.
Yeah. Oh no. So, in the past, in a lot of literature, we had elements where characters could see into the past or could witness things from the past, either through echoes or visions or mystical, I don't know, mirrors or things along those lines. But, and Jules, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm pretty sure that the notion of actually traveling into the past, as in participating in the past, first really reared its head in the Victorian period.
Yes, I think, you know, having the actual sort of mechanical experience, think there might, and I'm honestly not sure, so don't quote me on this, I think during the 16th century there might have been mentions of it to do with alchemy.
Ah, okay.
But it would not have been through a sort of physical scientific method so much as sort of, you know, invoking demons and things. So, and again, I'm not sure. I've just got the vaguest memory and I haven't really looked it up. So something for someone else to do if you're interested.
But certainly when the idea kind of gained popularity and real notice, it was the Victorian period.
Yeah, definitely.
I think. And this doesn't surprise me. We've obviously had a previous episode about the Victorians, but it doesn't surprise me in the least, because of the fact that all of these theories were kind of appearing, and it a time of great theorization. And I'm not saying that people in the past couldn't have, you know, gripped the idea of time travel, but certainly there was a mindset which made the subject more accessible, perhaps, from that point onwards. But I can imagine that the first time anyone picked up a book where time travel was involved, it would have been trippy as all hell.
Yeah.
Like, we take it for granted now, don't we? But, like, in the past, it's like, what? What?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm thinking I was about 13 when I read H.G. Wells' The Time Machine.
Yeah.
Which, you know, his time machine's not very explicit. It's literally a box that four men sit in, and there's a lever in the middle, and you press the lever and it turns you back in time. And he never really goes into the mechanics of it. So, that was already hilarious for a child who'd grown up watching Doctor Who, although admittedly that also doesn't really explain time travel very well.
No.
But again, what H.G. Wells sort of lacks when he talks about scientific method or whatever, he just gives you a vague fringe of, you know, what would have been sort of vaguely understood at the time. A lot of his books are to do with the thought experimentation around society and, you know, what that would really do if you could go back in time and forward in time. And things start to go significantly pear-shaped in The Time Machine. And it's actually quite creepy. The first half seems quite mundane, and it's guys sitting in their smoking jackets talking over dinner and then sitting in this box to say, oh, the marvel of time travel, etc., in a very Victorian gentleman manner. And then there's the part where they actually go forward to the future. I think they cause an issue in the past, which causes things in the present to fall out slightly differently.
Yeah.
You know, bearing in mind I've not read this for about 20 years, so then they go forward in time, and, you know, the Earth and civilization as they know it has been sort of completely destroyed. And there are two subsets of people. There are the Morlocks that live underground and actually are superior. And then the ones who've been left to live on the surface and have managed to evolve and carry on some sort of race up there. And then every so often the Morlocks come out of the holes in the ground and abduct people to become as servants and things below, which is really disturbing. Can you imagine something popping up out of the ground and abducting you?
Well, yes, I can. That's literally what fairies do. Sorry.
Okay, try and keep the fairy talk to it. We are going to bring back the F-jar at this rate, Madeline, because this has been like three episodes in a row.
I know, I'm sorry. But you laid that one out. That was inevitable. That was inevitable.
I'm in a sci-fi place. Try and join me there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I think you're right, and it would have been quite a game changer, just in the same way that Frankenstein was game changing in the sense of scientific horror. Reading about time travel would have been a sudden sort of oh my god moment for people reading that sort of literature, and it obviously spawned an awful lot of both the pulp and the slightly better class of science fiction story that came after that.
Yeah,
including
absolutely.
A classic which I will talk about in a minute.
Dare I ask, Jules? What exactly are the mechanics of time travel for all of us at home who want to maybe give it a shot?
Okay, there's various different theories of physics here, and I would like to point out that I did for a hot 5 minutes consider going into physics. But as I've said, my mathematical ability falls way short of my ambition on that one. So it wasn't going to happen. I'm not a physicist. I'm a hobbyist in that respect. So while I think I understand the theories, probably a true physicist, if they happen to be listening to this podcast, would come back to me and say, what the fuck are you talking about? So I'm doing my best, guys, okay? But there's various different theories, and I'm going to present theories as they are used in speculative fiction. So, for example, one that you come across a lot is the idea of the space-time continuum. So to start off with, the space-time continuum, or the Minkowski space, is actually a mathematical model which tries to explain how everything hangs together in the universe. So if you understand a bit of basic physics, you've got quantum theory, which explains how atoms and the microverse all interact together. And you've got the theory of general relativity, which, you know, actually wasn't entirely Einstein's work, by the way. As well. And the theory of general relativity looks at huge bodies. So, you know, like the sun, the moon, various other parts in the heavens. And so it's looking at the big, the macro. Those two theories actually don't marry up very well and kind of contradict each other. So this mathematical model was developed to help explain how it all hangs together. And from this, so from this you get the sort of theory that space and time are kind of the same thing, and they form almost like this, I suppose, this sheet, if you like, if you want to imagine it as kind of like a sheet. If you wanted to travel in time, imagine you're folding the sheet slightly, and then you're punching right the way through the material.
Right.
Okay, that, as I said, this is a crude model. There's definitely problems with this. For one thing, while the mathematical model is relatively sound, haha, pun, it's relatively sound. I'm sorry. I'll get my coat. Okay, while it's relatively sound, the actual idea of space-time being a sheet, or, you know, even a string in a spiral, and if you get the bits of spiral close together, you can jump from one to the other, doesn't really hold a lot of water. But it's one that is beloved of certain science fiction authors, because what you then get to do is send your characters back through time, through this punching through a sheet kind of thing, once you've folded it. And but then when they get to the point of origin, the point where they decided to go back in time and change things, things are changed and nobody remembers it except this one person. And that's kind of like a temporal scar, if you like. So it exists in the form of double memories. They remember things as they should have happened in order to get where things now are, now that the future has changed. But they also remember how things were before that. Somebody has to carry the burden. So that's a really nice narrative device. It's kind of bollocks in a physics sense, to be honest. But it's a nice narrative device. And since nobody has actually, to the best of our knowledge, actually invented time travel, then you kind of still get away with it. So that's one. Another theory is actually slightly more plausible. And that is, it forms part of multiverse theory, although it's not strictly multiverse. So let's say, okay, Madeline, give me a cake that you really like.
Chocolate?
Chocolate cake. Okay, right. Madeline has a large slice of chocolate cake in front of her. And she's got two choices.
I like this already.
She's got two choices. She can either decide to eat the chocolate cake, or she can decide, no, I'm going to be good today and not have the chocolate cake.
What do you mean, be good?
Okay, be good and have the cake, be good and not have the cake. You know, either way. Or I'm going to say, you know, so there's two decisions there. Let's say she decided to have the cake. And basically what happens then is the timeline splits. So there's one timeline where she had the cake and one timeline where she didn't have the cake. Now let's say she's about to eat the cake and she decides, actually, this is going to be messy. I think I'll have a spoon or a fork or something, an eating utensil. And then there's one where she just goes, ah, sod it, and picks it up in her hands. I don't care if I get chocolate everywhere. Really, I just give me cake.
Just plant my face straight in.
Straight in it. Yeah, or she does the face plant. So there's three decisions. So once again, the timeline would then branch in three different directions. Now, if you wanted to, if you see what I mean, there's lots of different branches. So time branches based on decisions, and these are very, very minor decisions. We will get to time travel, I promise. So you've got those three branches. Let's say Madeline's done the face plant thing. And, you know, she really enjoyed the cake, but half an hour later, she's kind of sticky and sort of regrets the entire thing. And she decides, actually, that chocolate cake would have gone much better as dessert after my dinner this evening. I wish I hadn't eaten it. Because she's quite frivolous with science, for some reason, she decides she's going to go in her time machine, hop back along her own timeline, and stop herself eating the chocolate cake, right? Now, theoretically, what happens when you make a decision which splits the timeline is that the other timeline either it ceases to exist for you. It exists for the person who decided not to have the cake, but it doesn't exist for you anymore because you have the cake. Follow me so far?
Yes.
Okay, so if you've gone back along the timeline and after the inevitable, oh my god, who are you? Get out, you intruder. Why do you look just like me? Holy shit, am I going mad conversation, which would inevitably follow. And you finally manage to persuade yourself not to have the chocolate cake. The thing is, you haven't actually changed the future. And the reason you haven't changed the future is because what you've done is you've created another split in the timeline. So all you've done is jumped yourself onto another timeline.
Yeah.
Because you can't change the past. So going back and changing a decision creates another split in the timeline, and therefore you haven't actually changed the future because you cannot change the past. So and I will talk about paradox in a moment, but that is basically the thing. You can travel back and forward in time, but you actually can't change anything. And that is actually kind of a theoretical time travel model that does hold some water. So there's that one.
Oh my god. My brain is reeling.
I tell you what, instead of going into loads of detail, I will talk a little bit about paradox because some of this comes into it as well. Paradox is really, really interesting. Most people will have heard of the grandfather paradox, and we've almost touched on that just now with the chocolate cake. The idea of the grandfather...
Sorry, this is going to be great.
Let's say, with the chocolate cake, that instead of going back to stop herself eating the chocolate cake, Madeline decides that she's had enough and she's going to kill herself with her own hand before she has the chocolate cake. I know this took a really dark turn. I'm very sorry about that. So, it's back along the time.
Screw you, past Madeline. I shall reap my revenge.
Yes, I've had enough of your shit. So she jumps back along the timeline at the point where she's about to eat the chocolate cake, and she finds a handy gun or knife or messier method, and she takes herself out of the equation. Theoretically, that shouldn't be possible because the Madeline of the future, once she has eliminated her past self, should no longer exist. Therefore, she can jump back as much as she likes, but she's never ever going to be able to take herself out. Except that if the Madeline of the future did jump back and kill the Madeline of the past, then all she's done once again is jumped onto a new timeline. Therefore, the person at the moment when she kills herself, God, this has got really grim, at the moment when she kills herself, she is no longer killing the same person who gave rise to her because she has once again split the timeline.
Yeah, so conceivably then it's... Because if it was the same timeline, then it would never work because the past self would be dead, therefore the future self couldn't have gone back in time, therefore the past self didn't die.
Yeah.
Or if it's a different universe, then the past self which has been killed is actually... a different past self.
Exactly.
So the future self of that past self's timeline will never exist because the past... But the future self who went back and did the killing has just basically jumped onto a different timeline and is not at risk of disappearing. So they can just take over in that timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. That is literally it. See? So that's the idea. I mean, everyone loves the grandfather paradox, the idea that, oh God, what if I went back in time and killed my own grandfather and then my parents would never exist and therefore I would never exist, is the whole premise of Back to the Future, which I love, by the way, but it's bollocks because what would happen is you'd jump back, you'd kill yourself or your grandfather or whoever, and you'd just start a new timeline. You wouldn't disappear. What you're killing is someone else's future self.
Yeah. So that's good.
So there's that paradox.
Sorry, when you said the grandfather paradox and then you started talking about the me eating cake, I thought you meant the being your own grandfather paradox.
Yeah, well, that's a slightly different paradox. That's what we call a causal loop. Now, what happens there is a future event is the cause of a past event, which is in turn the cause of a future event. The thing that characterises a causal loop is there is no point of origin. So as Madeline says, you go back in time... You meet your own grandfather or grandmother or whatever, you fall in love, you end up conceiving your or your let's make it a great 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 relative of some kind, because this is getting squicky. You end up then conceiving one of your own ancestors, who then later go on and their line carries on in order to eventually progenerate you, which is essentially so it's that's not the grandfather paradox in the sense of it's known in science. This is a causal loop, and it's something that needs to happen and will kind of inevitably happen if you, as long as you take future knowledge out of the equation.
Yeah.
But as you can see, there's no point of origin there, because you need to exist in order to think, I'm going to go back in time, and then you need to go back in time in order to actually exist.
Yeah, so it's a circle, but it never began anywhere.
Yeah. Okay, there's two more paradoxes. The last one's very complicated, but this one's not too bad. The Fermi paradox suggests that, basically, if time travel is possible, where are all the visitors from the future? So it's a way of saying, you know, time travel's not possible because nobody's using it. But the thing is, there's big holes in that argument. I'm sure it'd be a great narrative device, actually. However you decide to use it, where are all the visitors from the future? Well, A, they didn't want to come back. Perhaps it's so great in the future, nobody's like, we don't want to go back to the 21st century. That was shit. They had Brexit, they had Boris Johnson. You know, it was Trump over in America. Who wants to go back to that timeline? They're primitive, they're savages, basically. So maybe that's it. Maybe it does exist, but there's a cap on it, or there's a ban on them using it to travel into the past, and there's good reasons for that. Or maybe they're coming back, but they're disguising themselves. And I'm automatically thinking of hats and moustaches now for some reason. So that nobody realises who they are. Because the thing is, I think, if somebody jumped back in time and then said, hey, I'm from the future, you'd think they were barking mad, weren't you? Or, you know, as in Outlander, you'd probably try and burn them at the stake.
Yes. Well, actually, I mean, like, I'm fairly certain there have been cases of people who have claimed to be from the future and have just been put into psychiatric hospitals and so forth.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? You would never really be able to tell because you have no frame of reference and there's no proof. So it's the whole sort of Ken Pax thing, which, again, okay, that's alien, but, you know, it's still really interesting. Final one, it's Newcomb's paradox. this is great. Basically, this is a contradiction between the expected utility theory and the strategic dominance principle. And I won't bore you all by explaining what those are. But basically, if you could perfectly predict the future, then the perfect predictions themselves would appear to contradict free will, because the decisions you would make with free will are already known to you in order for you to perfectly predict them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So basically, you know how you will act in the future, therefore you cannot deviate from that, so you have no free will, you just know how you're going to act. It's a bit of a head spinner, really.
Yeah, so we have the causational thing here happening. Well, it's cause and effect.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of like ultimate determinism, isn't it? It's like, you know something's going to happen, and therefore you... But it is the best... any way you try and deviate from it, it still pushes you back on the same path. So at some point during that entire process, your free will is just evaporating.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about one other sort of very theoretical type of paradox. Your brain's not going to like explode on me, is it?
Okay, I'm prepared.
Okay, this one's kind of fun. Let's say that, shall we use the cake analogy, or do you want me to go back on something else?
No, let's use the cake analogy. It's comfortable.
Okay, let's say that Madeline knew that Madeline somewhere along the timeline. So you've got the Madeline who ate the cake, and then you've got the Madeline who had enjoyed the cake, and then in the future you've got the Madeline who decided she was going to go back in time and stop herself eating the cake. Let's say that the Madeline who had enjoyed the cake thought, I really wish I could have had that cake after dinner tonight. But then she realizes that she's going to go into the future. She's going to go into the past. Sorry, she's going to go into the past. She's seen evidence that her future self will go into the past. Now, let's say she doesn't really like the idea of risking, you know, the space-time continuum just so she can have a piece of cake after dinner tonight. So she decides to try and step off her own time, out of her own time trail, for lack of a better word.
Right.
So instead of following the steps you would have followed quite naturally in order to go back in time and get the cake saved for later, so stop yourself eating the cake, what you do is you try and do anything differently. Now, if it won't let you then split the timeline at that point, if for some reason your timeline will not split, then that mm-hmm. causes an instability effect because matter is energy. And when you start monkeying around with cause and effect in this way, what you're doing is destabilizing matter, which can cause a ripple effect and would actually destroy the universe, theoretically.
Oh, great.
This is also all good fun. So it's kind of looking at Newcomb's paradox there, in the sense of, you know what actions you need to take, but you don't actually want to take those actions because you've decided you don't like having your free will taken away, so you try and get away from them. What you end up doing instead is causing a massive sort of heat death type event.
Wow. Okay. Oh, all right.
I will, coming back from all of that sort of lovely, lovely physics jargon I've just spouted, let's talk about A Sound of Thunder, which is Bradbury's short story. And I think it might be the first Bradbury short story I ever read.
Yeah.
It's a very famous one. It follows a bunch of dinosaur hunters. Basically, it becomes like a tourist attraction to go back in time and hunt dinosaurs. And
yeah.
The main character is really up for this because, you know, big game hunter, there's nothing better than bagging yourself a dinosaur.
But yeah.
They've taken procedures. People must not stray from the trails marked, ever.
Yeah.
And they can only go for the animals that have been tagged as safe for them to kill.
Yeah.
It's immensely complicated. This guy, for whatever reason, strays from the path and steps on this black butterfly, this black winged butterfly, doesn't even realize he's done it, goes back in the time machine and finds out that everything's changed. The election results, which were going in his direction, have changed. The guy who's been made president is not his president. Everything's jumped onto a slightly different, slightly weird timeline. Everything's going to shit. And then he lifts his boot up and sort of realizes that, you know, the body of this butterfly sort of drifts off.
Right.
So when you see things like Heroes and they're talking about stepping on butterflies, what they're meaning is doing a Bradbury, going back in time, stepping on something and causing a fundamental shift on the timeline, which sends you off into La La Land, basically.
Yes. And it kind of does play very slightly into the whole idea, you know, of the butterfly effect. Which is that butterfly, which seemed very, very small within its own timeline, would have had very large, you know, effects in its environment. And so the fact that it has been removed from its environment before it could continue the path that it was supposed to means that the changes aren't small, but have a snowball effect that gets larger and larger and larger, to the point that it drastically changes the whole world. Which is a brilliant theory, actually.
It is.
Really terrifying.
It's a lot of, you can have a lot of fun with the narrative with that, definitely, because it comes into, oh God, what's her name? A Swiftly Tilting Planet and a Stitch in Time. Madeline somebody. That's her name. I can't remember her surname. I'm sorry, it's gone. There's four books. They're quite Christian-centric, but they are very good stories. And again, they're sort of looking at going back in time and making sure these things don't fall out quite the way they do. But what I love about the Bradbury story is that, aside from it being quite a good and quite creepy sci-fi story, is the fact that it's showing that nothing's really insignificant. And so yeah. all your actions should be given the appropriate amount of weight, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I was, earlier on, one of the earlier theories that you were talking about the time travellers aren't coming back, therefore time travel isn't real.
Yeah.
Did make me think of a story which I never actually read. Is it Amanda James that you're thinking of?
No.
Was it A Stitch in Time?
That's not Amanda James.
Penelope Lively?
No, it's not. It's one of the old ones. I'll look it up.
Apparently there's a lot of things called A Stitch in Time, so sorry about that. I was just trying to look it up for you. Okay, so I was thinking about a book which I was told about when I was younger, and I cannot for the life of me remember what it's called or who it's by, but it's one of these slightly older sci-fi ones, where what happens is that a man creates a time machine, the first time machine, and he turns it on, and the moment he turns it on, the room fills full of people stepping out of it who have come back in time to witness the creation of the first time. And the reason that basically they've, you know, the whole time thing is working is basically that no one could travel back until the first one was created. But now that the first one has been created, people can travel backward and forward very liberally. And what happens is that people keep, you know, traveling backward and forward, and you basically have access to all of time. But there's a future where people just suddenly stop traveling back. No one who's lived into that future has ever traveled back, and no one who's traveled forward to that period has ever returned. Right. So there's lots of people who live who kind of are born in that just before that era is about to start, and they just basically keep traveling back so that they never actually reach it, because a lot of people think it must be the end of the world or something like that. And there's all sorts of theories about it, and basically it's just that the world is sort of filling up with all of these time travelers because no one wants to go past that point. And they don't know maybe it's just because it's so amazing that no one wants to come back, or that just for some reason the time travel machines don't work. And I think it ends with the main character basically just biting the bullet and jumping forward to that period, but I don't actually know. But I loved that idea, and I particularly liked it that actually that's the reason why we don't have lots of time travelers now and about. It's because the first time machine hasn't been invented yet, and the moment it is, it'll be like, you know, I don't know, it's like a telephone. People from the future, other people can, you know, try and call as much as you want, as they want, but if you don't have a phone to answer, then the call's not going to go through. But the moment the phone is invented, then you can communicate with each other. And I just quite liked that.
Yeah, it's interesting. For narrative just purposes, shit that's on great. It,
like,
for like, narrative purposes, yeah, that's fun.
We've just gone through the theory, though, haven't we, Madeline? That doesn't work, does it? No, I know, but I just thought it was cute.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? It's fiction, and at a certain point, you're going to annoy people no matter what you do, and some people are quite happy with a little bit of, oh, it was time machine woo-woo kind of thing. They're happy with wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey as an explanation, rather than feeling patronised by it, so it's fine. By the way, I got it wrong. It's A Wrinkle in Time and A Swiftly Tilting Planet by Madeline L'Engle. Sorry, my brain.
Right. That's okay.
But, yeah. I was going to say something about Newcomb Paradox again then. And I've forgotten what it was. I'll come back to it. I'll come back to it. Let's look at... should we look at some of our favourite time travel type scenarios?
Yeah.
Well, in books and films and stuff.
Yeah, I think that we should. So I'm going to start by saying that obviously I'm not the biggest sci-fi fan ever. I don't read a lot of it, and I don't watch a lot of it, Star Trek aside. But I do the whole time travel thing. Now, weirdly enough, I'm not that big on the whole paradoxical, very heavy scientific theological side. Though that is always humorous in that, you know, it's like, we've travelled back in time, but we can't, you know, we've now got to be careful. And I actually sort of like it, I prefer it in a little bit more of a fun way. And it really does offer this chance to kind of indulge in a lot of, and you know, just, it's just fun because there are so many challenges and interests. And I think that for a lot of people, that's kind of the draw of time travel.
Yeah, definitely. I think I was just thinking about Star Trek First Contact, actually, whereby they have to go back in order to stop the Borg, but they have to be really, really careful. Otherwise, they end up jumping themselves onto a slightly different timeline. Although, really, Star Trek doesn't explain it that much. They talk about there just being one timeline.
I think my favourite time travel episode in Star Trek was the one which was The Trouble with Tribbles DS9.
I thought you'd love that one. I mean, it is just brilliant, isn't it?
The funniest thing about that was that they had to address the fact that the makeup for the for the Klingons was so different. So they just made a joke of it. Well, you have Worf, who obviously looks like a Klingon from, you know, Next Gen and then DS9. And then you've got all the Klingons who are walking around the station who just basically look like normal people. And they're all there in this cafe. And you know, the waitress is like, oh, you're the first, you know, you're the sixth people to order a Ractuccino. You know, all the Klingons did. And everyone's like, Klingons? Where are the Klingons? She's like, there, there, and there. And they look around at these very ordinary looking people and then just look at Worf and go, what's going on? And he's just there like, we don't like to talk about it. And that's it. That's how they address this glaring canonical.
Well, it's not, I mean, they have filled it in since then and saying there was a time when the Klingons ended up blending, I've gone off on a tangent, but they ended up blending their DNA with humans and genetically engineering Klingon-human hybrids in order to pass kind of as spies when the Empire, when the Klingon Empire and the Starfleet were kind of at war with each other. So, I mean, that's a really interesting side bit of canon, but yeah, it's a brilliant bit. Like, we don't like to talk about it because it becomes absolutely anathema, Klingons talking about genetic engineering, because they're all supposed to be these flawless specimens, and they made these hybrids complete outcasts when it didn't work, and that's why there was a genetic engineering ban both through Starfleet and through the Klingon Empire, which obviously spawns the whole Wrath of Khan thing. Oh my god, I'm such a nerd.
You are such a nerd. Really, really. I just prefer it as a joke.
But yeah, that one is a lot of fun. And I think the thing is, the ones that are a lighter and a lot of fun like this, I don't want to say First Contact is light, because actually it's kind, I remember finding that film quite disturbing when I first saw it. Because the Borg are scary. The Borg are genuinely scary. The lighter ones, which don't go too much into the scientific theory, sometimes really trying to be true to the scientific theory can make for a heavier story, not because of the science, but because it's much more difficult to do things narratively that will fit with the idea of going back and splitting a timeline.
Yeah.
Than it is with, oh, we punched through the space-time continuum and changed things, and then we've gone back to the future and everything's gone to shit kind of thing. You know,
it's
a lot more linear and satisfying in an immediate way, rather than saying we expect you, the reader, to puzzle through all these tiny little like sidetracks. So I get why people do it, and you know, I'm kind of okay with that. I really like The Chronicles of St. Mary's by Jodie Taylor, which I've mentioned before. It's about a group of time traveling historians who go back in time. They can't interfere, so a bit like David Attenborough, and obviously he doesn't time travel, or at least I don't think he does. They go back in time to document events of historical interest. And what happens there is when they start to hit upon something like anything that would hint at producing paradox, for example, history doesn't like it. They are literally serving the muse of history, although they don't realize it. And if they start to deviate, then what happens is the universe tries to kill them by dropping things on their heads, or by, they get randomly attacked by a stampeding bull or something like that. So they all know damn well that you cannot alter things, because if you do, history gets really pissed off with you and tries to take you out of the equation. History doesn't want you to change the timeline. It just wants you to make notes. So it's quite a clever way of getting past the whole sort of, what mechanism are you using? Because she never explains it. And also, what happens when you cause a paradox? And it's a case of, she'll flirt with paradox, but at the end of the day, what happens is somebody ends up dead if you end up creating a paradox.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like pretty much any very long-running series that has your supernatural or sci-fi elements to it will usually have some sort of time travel episode. So it obviously happens a lot in Star Trek, as well as The Trouble with Tribbles. There have been a couple of other really funny time travel episodes in DS9. One which was actually quite serious, where Sisko and Bashir travel back to kind of a time which is just in our future, where basically unwanted people are just sort of locked up in these, you know, big shanties, and they can't escape, and it's this, you know, it's a really terrible period of history. Yeah. And so there's one episode which is funny, and then there's another one which is really funny. Sorry, I was going to say that terrible period is not a funny episode. It's a very interesting one. But then there's a funny episode where Quark and his brother and his nephew, and I cannot believe I've just forgotten all of their names. Quark, Nog, and shut up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm laughing because you said I've forgotten all their names, and the minute you said I've forgotten all their names disappeared out of my head like they've been sucked up. And then you managed to say the names, and I'm like, that's where they went. Madeline sucked them through to her.
You transferred the information over. And basically they go back in time, and they're all aliens, and they go back in time and land on Earth, and are the first alien on Earth. And Odo, of course, turns up as well, because he was hiding the whole time, and that's hilarious. So that was done all very well, and it's very cute. It's very funny. So they do some really great time travel episodes in that, but I also think that you get a lot of it in fantasy stuff as well. I mean, just as example, you have time travel in Harry Potter.
Yep.
That occurs. Time travel is a huge plot thing in the Cursed Child, which is all about time travel and how it all goes wrong. But you also get the beginning of the BBC series Atlantis starts with time travel. That's never explained. We don't know what's happening, but it starts with time travel, and then they basically forget that it happened and ignore it, yeah. Which I never really understood, but hey ho. But yeah, you do tend to have these time travel episodes throughout, and I actually really like it.
And we should obviously mention Doctor Who, because we can't have time travel without the Lord of Time.
Yes. Of the Time Lords.
It's just, I love Doctor Who, I really do. And I grew up with it. And you know, in fairness, my dad grew up with it, so that's how long Doctor Who's been going.
Yeah.
But and it's a great concept. Again, the science doesn't really bear out what's happening, but it's still it doesn't matter in a sense, and it doesn't matter with some of these others. And I know I sound a bit like I'm saying yes, but it's bollocks. Well, it is bollocks, but it also doesn't matter because it's a vehicle for a good story.
Yeah, And I also think it's worth remembering that when Doctor Who started out, it was kind of meant to be educational.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, going back to sort of look at different periods of history, and now there's less of that and more alien nonsense, but you know, and politics and savior arcs and other things like that, but it was about sort of exploring different periods of history. And one who has done very well is kind of have those episodes which feature historical characters. Like, I think everyone got very emotional in the Vincent van Gogh episode.
Yeah.
Which was obviously one of the newer ones, and that was very well done. And the Shakespeare one was cute and very predictable. And there was one with Queen Victoria and werewolves and all that jazz.
That was great. I actually really enjoyed that. Yeah. I think that's the thing. It's kind of light and entertaining. But, you know, there are some interesting seeds of moral dilemma in there as well, which is something Doctor Who has always done really, really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we should mention Avengers Endgame, because even though I felt the time travel plot in that went on far too long for the size of the film, minor quibble, because I thought Endgame was great, it does actually manage to be scientifically relatively accurate.
Yeah.
And it's even explained to you in the film, and I imagine it's sort of, because there's so much going on with the Avengers, and there's so much action, and there's so much bright colour. Is it just me that seems to see all the bright colour all the time with Avengers?
Yeah.
Which is great, but they even explain. So when you've got the Hulk talking to the lead magician, lead sorcerer.
Doctor Strange?
No, not Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange's mentor.
The Wizard Supreme?
Grand
I was going to say the Grand Nagus, but that's we're going back to DS9.
Definitely not the Grand Nagus. This is definitely about money. Not money, rather. Sorry. God. Anyway, they even explain it to you. She even says, yes, but if you take the stone from here, what happens is it will create this timeline, and I can see what's going to happen on that timeline, which is why the Hulk says, yeah, but we'll use it and we'll bring it back to exactly the point we took it from. And it's a huge leap of faith on her part to say, okay, I'm going to let you potentially destroy my future. By jumping me onto a timeline that I don't want to go on, because I know everything's going to be dreadful there, just so that you can fix everything that's fucked up in the future as it is now, which, let's be honest, kind of isn't really my problem in this instance.
Yeah. But then the thing is, like, I never really understood which theory of time travel they were using, because on the one side you have, like, the past version of Gamora running around, and also Nebula kills her past version as well, but then continues to exist. So is that the case of separate timeline now, separate existence?
They get away with it. They've managed to stay on the same timeline, but in jumping back, what they did was they caused those two characters to split their own timeline and jump onto theirs.
Right. So that's what happened. It was very confusing.
By that point in the film, because everything is happening and everything's coming at you all at once, you kind of just need to just lie back and let it happen, so to speak.
Yeah.
But thinking about it afterwards, that is kind of what happened. They caused a split, but the split meant that people who were dead came from the past and jumped forward in future onto another timeline, which is tricky but apparently theoretically possible. So there you go.
So speaking of time travel in Avengers Endgame, I saw a really funny post that I could not get out of my head, which is that when Tony back, he meets his own father. And his father is apparently really enthusiastic about, you know, the upcoming birth of his son, Anthony Stark. And of course, Tony introduces himself as Howard Potts. And someone just did this great post, which explains why actually Howard Stark, despite the fact that in the movie he was apparently super enthusiastic about his son, was actually less than a stellar father. And someone just says it's the moment where Howard Stark is watching his son grow and realizing he looks more and more like that guy Howard Pops, Howard Pops, and that his wife must have slept with Howard Pops instead. Sorry, it just felt appropriate with the whole going back and being your own father theory. But yes, there we go.
To be fair, when they start that bit and he's actually talking to Tony Stark and talking to Howard Stark and everything, potentially they could be accidentally splitting the timeline there because not everything is happening as it should do. And he really should be concentrating not on talking to his father and having that last moment of connection, but making sure Howard Stark does everything exactly the way he did it before so the timeline doesn't split.
Yeah.
It's Tony Stark being a selfish ass again.
Oh no, he deserves this. Also, it's not like it's his fault.
That was fan service. It was blatant. I understand it. I really do. And if it was something I really wanted to see a fan of, I wouldn't have cared either. I reserve the right to be a little bit sniffy about it, however.
Anyway.
Anyway, I think that might be enough theoretical physics for one day.
Yes, I think it might be. I am just going to mention one more case of time travel that we're getting a lot of at the moment. And even though I don't actually watch it, there is a series called Boruto, which is a sequel to the very, very popular anime Naruto. And in Boruto, Naruto's son, and you've had all of the, you know, the main characters of Naruto are now all grown up and they have children of their own. But in the recent arc of Boruto has gone back into the past with his mentor Sasuke, and in order to stop another guy who's gone into the past to kill Naruto, because he can't kill Naruto in the future because Naruto is too powerful, so he says, I'll go back in time and kill him as a child. And it almost works, apparently. And basically, I'm super for this kind of time travel because it's 100% fan service nostalgia, where young boy gets to interact with his own father as a young boy as well, and they get to sort of, you know, be friendly with one another and get perspective on each other and see what life used to be like. And
that just reminds me of the Studio Ghibli film When Marnie Was Here, which is adapted from a book. But yeah, she's very isolated, and I think she goes back. She doesn't realise she's going back in time every time she visits the house, but she goes back and becomes her grandmother's playmate. And it's, again, a bit like Thomas Midnight Garden, where he doesn't realise he's becoming the old lady's playmate when she's dreaming of being in the garden. But there's something really lovely about those, because it's not the sort of time travel which actually affects anything other than the state of the person internally.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's nice because it's used basically as more of a character analysis. And it's not used in the time travel thing is almost incidental. Yeah. It's just a device in order to create the kind of whereby you get to confront the past through your own eyes instead. And that, I think, is very, very popular. And I super, super love it. I really, really do. And I often daydream about books that I've read where I'm like, but if only this character could go into the past and see what this character went through when they were younger. Oh, it would be so interesting. I have done it a lot. I've been thinking about it the whole way through reading The King's Knight and just saying it would be great if they could all see each other's childhoods and see what that was like.
Do you know, I knew you were going to say that. I knew that somewhere in there was you thinking about Cuthbert going back and seeing Gregory as a boy.
Yes, absolutely. But also Daffith seeing Cuthbert as a boy as well, seeing how he grew up and how Daffith grew up. But then Gregory just just all of them seeing Gregory's past. Oh, breaks my heart. But yes, I'm super into it. I've also planned so many little short stories in my head about the Hamartia cycle, where they go back and see various people's childhoods. Usually Zachary, because there's a lot there. There's a lot there to unpack.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, I think we better draw it to a close there.
Yes, I think we better had. Before we go, it is time for our Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. So, Jules, I believe you've got one for us.
I have. I've got a subject-appropriate one. I've just finished the third book in Mark Lawrence's Impossible Times trilogy. It's called Dispel Illusion. If you haven't read the first two books, One Word Kill and... Oh, God. One Word Kill. What's the second book?
Anyway, there is
a second book, and it's gone out of my head. Just find One Word Kill by Mark Lawrence and read the entire trilogy. They're actually on Kindle Unlimited, if you happen to be a member. Otherwise, they're sort of like $2.99 each. They're well worth it. It's such a good series. The theory is that, I think I've mentioned One Word Kill before, but the idea is that young Nick Hayes, who is a mathematical prodigy, but sort of dumbs himself down because he doesn't want to get sent off to a school for young geniuses or anything, he and his Dungeons and Dragons playing friends are all perfectly happy, and he's sort of checking out the new girl who's just joined them, who's this hot goth chick.
Of course.
They're all sort of about 15 years old, and then Nick discovers he's got cancer, and they've quite a low survival rating. He's just starting to go through chemo and that, and then he starts to think he's hallucinating a vampire, only it turns out not to be a vampire, it turns out to be an older version of himself who's come back in time to get him to do something. And Mark Lawrence follows good scientific models here without making it too heavy. You have to pay attention, but it's very funny. There's a lot of wry humour. And really, what it is when you get to the end of the trilogy, it's a time travel romance. It's a time travel love story. Because everything Nick does, ultimately, is because of his love for this one girl. And everything she does is because of her love for him. But you can't see that right at the very beginning, because you're going from the perspective of a 15-year-old right up to the perspective of someone in their 40s. And it's just absolutely fascinating. It's lovely, it's sweet, it's pretty easy to follow. They're really quick reads, and they're just really, really good. I highly recommend them.
That sounds really, really wonderful.
Also, the audiobooks are awesome, so they're worth checking out.
Thank you for that recommendation. Well, thanks very much, guys, for listening. Do leave us comments about Jules's quick lesson on time travel theory.
Please don't build any machines based on my understanding of physics, okay? Get someone else to do the mathematics.
We also recommend that you don't go into the past to kill yourself over a slice of cake. It's really not worth it. The nice thing is that you can all eat cake whenever you want and then just suffer the consequences. Really, just be an adult and suffer the consequences. And on that note, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.